Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Off the ball breakfast.
But I thought you all liked, so you like Amram. You thought Amram looked good too.
He did. He also looked very well.
I never liked his hair.
It's important to be caught.
He was doing too much, but he didn't do so bad.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome to episode 115 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. We're here every week, folks, with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, a bit of crack as well. Reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your podcasts. How are you, Johnny?
I'm very well, JD.
I was watching, didn't have a cent in it. Now is the hour when the Thiestas chase at Goran on Thursday, having tipped him on News Talk Breakfast at 10 to 1. So you don't have to have financial investment to be happy when something like that happens.
Makes you
obviously happier.
Makes you happier, though. I tipped the runner up. Didn't have a bet either.
Who was Owen Staples, the rider of Now is the Hour, Gavin Cromwell's horse?
I might have been the first person to interview Owen, because I do recall interviewing him at Wexford, which would be his local track, earlier on last summer. And I'm not sure how many winners he'd had, if any, at that stage. He was really just kind of coming onto the scene. And I hope he doesn't mind me saying, I think he was probably a little bit nervous, because it was like, he's just a kid, like, and he hadn't probably done many interviews before, and he's absolutely exploded onto the scene since. It's just been an amazing success story. And I suppose when you're attached to the yards that he's attached to, like Gavin Cromwell is no fool, gives the jockey a chance, but he a bit like Reese Houlihan now on the flat, you see these kids starting off with their claim and you're like, I can benefit from this person's claim, because, you know, he's just really good value, and he's not going to be riding with a £7 claim for too long. He's on 26 winners this season. That's incredible going. Like, that would put him relatively high in the table. 26 winners from 232 rides. There's no doubt the story of the race really was Sean Cleary Farrell's coming down.
Another young jockey.
And, you know, I don't like some of the criticism of what happened there. And I know that Sean Cleary Farrell will look back on it himself as a pretty soft.
Well, Spanish Harlem, I know, I've followed this horse for quite a long time, is not the most fluent jumper.
And he'd gotten into, like, a few things that
I can't believe he's actually won the races he's won late in his career, because to me, I thought he was done over fences.
Yeah.
He couldn't jump a fence for me.
And he was probably he was a 28 to 1 chance. So he's probably this type of ride that, say, if Willie were offering him around the yard, Sean Cleary Farrell, well, I'll absolutely ride whatever you want me to. But I think, you know, a kid who's a £7 claimer, you know, you have to be cognizant of that. And I wasn't at Goran yesterday. I met a few mutual friends of ours who were there. And there were a couple of things that, you know, that stuck in the mind of the person. One of the lads I was talking to was how absolutely gutted Sean Cleary Farrell was afterwards.
Sad.
And moreover, the lengths to which Paul Townend went to console him, like, well after race, like, he was just the nicest thing to do, to be that that friendly hand when you really need somebody looking out for you. And I would hope that the weighing room's competitive place, but the senior jockeys who rode in this race, Mark Walsh rode the runner-up. I mean, Mark will wonder how the horse didn't win. Sean Flanagan rode Conyers Hill. Townend rode in the race. Danny Mullins, Darragh O'Keefe, JJ Slevin, Keith Donoghue, Sean O'Keefe. You know, Jack Kennedy, Brian Hayes, Philip Enright. There were £7 claimers in this race. Just to mention, Josh Williamson, son of Norman, he claims 5, was riding in the race. Dylan Kidd was claiming 7 in the race. Kevin Healy was claiming 7 in the race. John Shinnick, who was nearly champion condition last year, claimed 3. Carl Miller claimed 5 on the 3rd. Now is the Hour was ridden by a £5 claimer. And Sean Cleary Farrell is a £7 claimer who has ridden winners for Willie Mullins. And his dad, after whom he was named, was one of 3 jockeys to pass away in 2003 in awful circumstances after a flat race in Galway, which resulted in the subsequent death of Timmy Hoolan as well. It was a terrible year, and that was the same year that we lost Kieran Kelly. And I know that the Cleary family have gotten an immense pride to see Sean do as well as he has. And I know Willie Mullins well enough to say that Willie Mullins would have been absolutely magnanimous about this and would have also praised him for the job he did on the horse prior to the last, because as you say,
I thought he was going to win.
He definitely was going to win.
He kind of got him back. I thought he was going to get past, and then he kind of got a second win there. And look, Goran Park, to me, I texted a friend yesterday and said, look, it's going to be 10 miles in that ground, not 3 miles. And like, I don't think he did anything wrong, personally. And look, even Mark Walsh don't think he did anything wrong. It is, the Thiess is a strange race, and sometimes you're at the last and only a handful of horses finished. I think it's the hardest chase in Ireland.
It's like, yesterday was absolutely perfect. Like, we live in times of turmoil in terms of, like, a lot of, you know, even on the base level of horse racing, like Nace being called off again on its big day was just very, very hard to take for the track. Conservatively, actually, I won't quote the figure, but what that would have cost Goran yesterday if that meeting had been called off was, like, a lot of money for a racetrack in uncertain times for racecourses. And when there was an inspection call at 4:30 on Wednesday, I was, you know, we've mutual friends were on a Jolly Boys outing to Goran yesterday, and I was, no way this meeting will be called off, or no way this meeting will be called on, as in it'll still be going ahead. And I was amazed that it was still on then. 11 mils fell overnight and it was still on, so I was expecting, I mean, this ground is going to be like totally unraceable. It was perfect. It was just winter racing that was so warming of the soul. Like, when you get a finish like the Thiess, where you have a horse at a big price who was written in the stars for Sean Cleary Farrell, was definitely going to win. And then Better Times Ahead, who was my fancy in the race, is quite badly hampered by the loose horse. Now as the hour gets up in the dying strides. But the beginner's chase was incredible. Like, Willie Mullins, who's such an honest trainer, his horses, if he has anything to do with it anyway, are always trying. He's just an honest trainer. Say to Chance, Funicula, Funiculi, and Kill Alexander. And the fourth, Butch Cassidy, Soldier Milan, trained by Emmett Mullins. A short head, a nose, and a neck after 2.5 miles in a beginner's chase on that ground. Like, that is literally that. It was incredible. And the Thiess had everything going for it. But, congratulations to Gavin Cromwell and Owen Staples. It's kind of strange that, you know, I texted him this morning that reports of his demise have been greatly exaggerated. I did feel the stable form thing was slightly overplayed. It's not being said now.
Well, I don't think you can also be red hot all of the season, and I don't think it's a good idea to be. This is funny because Danny Mullins rode that outsider to win that beginner's chase, and that was in the double green colours of Simon Muneer and Isaac Swade.
C'est ta chance.
Yeah, who also had Green Hope under Danny Mullins win at Down Royal the other day at 125-1. 125-1!
Yeah, and one of the remarkable things about that race was the trainer, it was his first winner, one of the Crawfords. Ross Crawford. And he just made a strange enough comment after the race about, in relation to the ride that he should have gotten the day before. Like, it was kind of basically, there's no two ways about it. It was a dig at the jockey who rode the horse the day before. When, in fairness, he was 125-1. He was 100-1 in Leopardstown. But the trainer obviously expected something of him. And I think Ross Crawford, he said, like, you know, I don't want to be having a dig at jockeys, but then he obviously did have a dig. I think we'll hear a lot more of Ross Crawford, because to have a horse win at 125 so early in your career, and there was no fluke about it, I was very much fancying the runner-up. It was a hell of an achievement.
I just feel there's more big prize winners at the moment in racing.
There are, so, Judy, yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite simple that, and I'm not sure this is always for the benefit of punters, because some of the prices returned at the top of the market to me are too short compared to what we'll say the horse is trading on the exchanges. But since the start of the pandemic, the prices aren't returned by the bookies on course anymore. I think they only account for 10% of the book. It's returned by the big high street firms. So basically they dictate the prices. So if a horse is 1,000 on the exchanges, they have no problem going 300.
Interesting.
Mm. So whereas Paddy Power's dad, back in the day, David Power, he would say out of respect to an owner, he'd never go bigger than 20-1 a horse, which was interesting as well.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to get one of those 100-1 winners, Johnny. I can sense it.
You just need to lay one out for a race, JD.
Yeah, yeah. When I win the Euro Millions, I can actually afford to get a horse.
It is doable, and I can guarantee you there are people out there who are scheming to do it, because there are people out there who are always constantly thinking of, how do I beat the bookies? Like your book.
You remembered. There you go. 15 years ago on Monday it came out. 26th of January 2011. There you go.
There's a horse running today. He's actually running.
Well, I didn't know you, Johnny.
In 20 minutes. Look at us now. There's a horse running today in 20 minutes, I think. And he's a well-touted Nicky Henderson horse. We're recording this earlier in the day. And one of the lads in one of my WhatsApp groups said, this is a half-brother to Balofilo, and brought up a message that I'd sent. And I sort of looked up Balofilo, the half-brother. Like, this horse is ancient. I said, because my WhatsApp messages had expired. I said, when did I send that message? He goes, 2017. So I tipped up Balofilo at 16 to 1 the night before. He went off 14 to 1 and finished nowhere, right? But apparently the mare has had like 17 foals or something. And one of them is now a 3-year-old for Nicky Henderson. I was like, Balofilo, that doesn't ring a bell. 2017. It's been a lot of water under the bridge and a lot of winners and losers since then.
Yeah, so we got Cheltenham Trials Day on Saturday. Look, we're talking about soft ground now after all the rain. There's a few grade twos here. Let's start with the Cotswold Chase, because that's probably the one that people will look, zone in on at 225, 3 miles, 1.5 furlongs, four runners, including Spillane's Tower, who was the winner of the big race at Ferry House. If I'm right, the Gold Cup was either the winner of that race. He definitely won the Punchestown Novice Chase.
Yeah.
And he had a really good run for Jimmy Mangan as a novice chaser. Maybe, I don't know if you say he's lost his way, but he's battling Grey Dawning, who's the Great British Hope, possibly one of the Great British Hopes for the Gold Cup at Cheltenham this March, who's an odds-on shot. So Grey Dawning's Spillane's Tower, Lampress and Flooring Porter, the quartet for the Cotswold Chase at Cheltenham on Saturday.
Yeah, this is a great little race. And it's interesting that JP McManus has four different jockeys for his four horses in Cheltenham with the way Harry Cobden's situation at the moment. So and Jack Kennedy is riding this horse, which is quite interesting for Jimmy Mangan. Just looking at the odds now, I was recording something else tomorrow and he was 5-1. He's now 7-2. I think that's more like it. 5-1 for me was a bit big on this horse, because he may well continue to come in for support, but like, he's getting £6 off Grey Dawning, who's officially rated £2 higher than him. So in theory, he should beat him. But I would think it's more to the point that, as you said, JD, like, it's too early to be writing him off. He did stay this trip, give or take, when he beat Monty Starr. I think we were both there that day at Punchestown. And I definitely felt his hurdles won the last day. I tipped him at Nace. He was very disappointed. But I definitely felt Punchestown was a lot more like it. And I'd say Jack Kennedy will ride a kind of a no-pressure race.
Waiting race.
Lampressi won the race last year. Florian Porter, I presume, will make the running. A bit of a U-turn for him. But Spillane's Tower, if he finishes a length second, I'd say they'd be delighted. He's still in the Gold Cup. Factor File isn't. But I do feel he's well capable of giving it a big shout here.
Yeah, most of his runs have been right-handed, Spillane's Tower. That's one that I did note about him. I mean, Grey Dawning is consistent. I mean, I don't think the distance is an issue. He's fresh after winning the Haydock Betfair Chase in November over the distance. And he's a course winner. So I think the only question is the ground, and maybe a feeling he's just a little bit below top class. It'd be my feeling, a little bit.
Yeah,
Grey Dawning.
It is a grade two, and he doesn't necessarily need to be top class
exactly,
here.
Yeah.
You know, he beat Royal Pagai the last day at this stage, and Stellar Story was back third. And that was obviously the race notable for Haiti Killer not performing. I don't know what that form amounts to. And I definitely felt at 4-7 he was put in very, very short, because Lampresse, you know, given his liking for this track and the fact that he ran perfectly well, maybe he could have finished closer to Blaze the Way the last day, and he's 11 years of age at this stage, and he looked a bit like a shade outpaced for much of that race. But he's a big, big player, and for all that it's a four-runner race, it's a fascinating little race.
The International Hurdle down at 3 o'clock at Cheltenham on Saturday, 2 miles and a furlong, has got four runners. I mean, you could probably rule out Nemean Lion and Brentford Hope. This is about two. Sergino, unbeaten in his life, 7-7, now back over hurdles after running over fences. He'd a year out. High cruising speed. He's won on heavy, though, in France as well. Will need to settle, but obviously he's got the engine to win if he does. The new line, though, is a fascinating opponent. Probably the best horse Dan Skelton's ever had. Unbeaten bar a fall in the Fighting Fifth at Newcastle in November. A course winner of the festival last year, and will exploit any weaknesses in Sergino. This is interesting. I mean, I think the new line might be a bit more straightforward, but Sergino's got all the talent.
Just a shame that Tony Bloom's Poneros isn't running here, because he was left in, and I felt he would have been the one horse you could say potentially, and he's realistically he probably would have been about 10-1, but he would have had a bit of upside. Having said that, with the favourite, like these two horses are taking up about 50% of the book in the Champion Hurdle, which is, I didn't realise that until yesterday. It wasn't really a market I was looking at. Sergino is 5-4 for the Champion Hurdle, and the new line is give or take 9-2. And a lot depends, JD, on how you felt the new line was going when he fell at Newcastle, because I certainly don't think he was definitely going to win. Anzadam was travelling better than him. Now, he would have beaten Anzadam, presumably, because Anzadam couldn't win the race as it was. But for me, he was under pressure a bit. And Sergino is just so uncomplicated. He has the pace to drop back into a small field, no problem. He generally runs in small fields, smashed Golden Ace at Kempton, probably would be better for the run. I don't see how he doesn't win, to be honest. Like, the new line might reverse form the champion hurdle, but in a four-runner race here, I can't see how he does.
The Cleve Hurdle is a three-mile contest at 3:35 Cheltenham on Trials Day. Six runners in Pose Etoile is actually odds on now with the bookmakers in the colours of JP McManus. Strong leader, a second favourite. Mashan, too, is a course and distance winner going the right way, but he must prove he's graded class. A grade two, that is. I can't have strong leader. Like, he's turned up twice in this race and been beaten. I don't think Cheltenham is his track. The other ones, to me, I can't have. So, to be honest, it's not really a betting race for me. And Pose Etoile should win.
Yeah, it's
won Gino, the long walk hurdle at Ascot last time.
It's Gino Desire, who was trained in Germany as a Lotta and was third to Zarkava in the Arc, which I think I was there that day, actually. So maybe I didn't know the influence for Gino would have. It's Gino would have all these years later, because It's Gino is now 23 years of age, but he's two of his best three horses are probably Sergino and Impose Trois. And they're both running on this card. And Impose Trois is very, very hard to oppose here. I almost, and I'm not getting the trumpet out here, but when I was tipping up Il Était Temps last Friday, I was like, how does this horse not win? In the back of my mind, I was like, lo and behold now, given that I've always opposed him and pretty much tipped John Bonnet against him, lo and behold now, he'll disappoint. And he did. And there's a bit of that here with Strong Leader and Impose Trois. You know, it's like going back again to the well and kind of almost like expecting something different, even though there's no reason to suggest that you will. But maybe Impose Trois will have an off day. If he doesn't, he'll win. I really like, and I think Nico de Bonneville gets criticism, I think justifiably, over his rides on Constitution Hill at times. He's definitely been very good on this horse. I'd say he's a joy of a horse to ride. Was beaten on him behind Jimmy Desai at Cheltenham in March. But he just seems to be really on top of his game this season. Travels strongly in his races. 3 miles suits him down to the ground. And he should win.
We also have the juvenile hurdle trial, the JCB one at Cheltenham on Saturday at 12:40. So, I mean, you're looking at horses that are going to turn up on the final day in the festival on the 13th of March, the Friday. I mean, Manelli Yoga, 2-1 shot now. Maestro Conti is drifting for Paul Nicholson, and One Horse Town, who has won at the course back in November in one of these trials, but then beaten in December, has attracted a bit of money. A bit of outside money for La Luna, Artista and Sonic Pioneer. These can be tricky races to solve. But Paul Nichols, I think, is quite sweet on this Manelli Yoga, who was a 360 grand purchase out of Ireland.
I was just thinking recently in racing, right, if they can make one change to racing, it's that you've prize money back to eighth place. So that prize money to cover your fees, your entry fee back to eighth place, to encourage people to run horses, particularly in grade ones. Because it just makes it so much more of a betting heat. And this race here with 10 runners and so many unexposed types, it's just exactly what racing should be. Really, really interesting race with a short price, as you say, easy to back favourite in Maestro Conti. Manelli Yoga's coming in. And Manelli Yoga, the last day, beat Active Innocence. And this was the great situation where Active Innocence, who was with Paul Nichols, was beaten by a recruit of Paul Nichols. And Paul Nichols said afterwards, well, more or less, that gave me particular pleasure, given that the horse was bloody well taken off me and I'm after beating him in Active Innocence, who runs elsewhere in the card and is a well-regarded horse. He was 2-7 that day. Manelli Yoga, who was only a 3-year-old, taking on a 5-year-old, albeit on the 29th of December. He was in receipt of weight, but he did it square and fair on the day for me. Maestro Conti, he just looks very, very good. And I'd be inclined to think he'll have Manelli Yoga's measure here, particularly if the ground is soft or worse, because he stays well. Interesting runner as well, JD, is Lord Byron, who's trained by Faye Bramley.
Justin Carthy owns that.
Is that...
Came out of Aidan O'Brien's yard.
That's a hell of a shout, yeah, because I that's not the colour that came up on the Racing Post. Came out of Aidan O'Brien's yard, and Faye Bramley and Tony McCoy is associated with that yard. They train Winston Jr. Now, I tipped up Genealogy, not getting the trumpet out again, but I said Genealogy was way overpriced at 33-1.
That last go.
Finished second at 16s, but Winston Jr. absolutely bolted up, like bolted up. And I was watching the race with David Jennings, the race post. He said, this is the Fred Winter fancy for a lot of people, this Winston Jr. And Winston Jr., prior to that, had been left for dead by Manila Study, who was another of the Manila horses who was sold over to England by John Nallen. But Fabe Bramley has some nice juveniles, and Lord Byron could be interesting at a price here because he good flat form, second in a mile and six maiden for Aidan O'Brien, and whilst he finished second at Exeter, that didn't seem a bad run.
And La Luna Artista has got a bit of money behind it, and it was an easy winner work last time out for Jane Williams. She could be one of the better outsiders in this 12:40 at Cheltenham on Saturday. But pick one for the radio, Johnny, for this weekend.
Beat Enya at Warwick, which is fair to say she sailed away from Enya.
Yes!
On that, what am I doing? I'm picking one for the weekend.
For the radio.
For the radio. I'm going to pick one at Cheltenham then, because I have really strong fancies in Ireland. At Cheltenham, I will give... hopefully you might get slightly bigger, but I will give Espeland's Tower. Maybe hopefully you might get 4-1 tomorrow. I think there's enough reason to think he's good enough to win that race if all goes well.
Espeland's Tower
225.
Espeland's Tower 225. Cheltenham on Saturday for Johnny. I'm going for Walking on Air in the Great Yorkshire Chase at Doncaster.
Always makes me think of Joy Division.
Well, there you go. 7.5-1. Walking on Air. We fell at the last. Fence last year in this race with the race at his mercy, comes back 7.5-1 in the 205 at Doncaster on Saturday. Okay, Johnny, let's look as well at this Great Yorkshire Chase in more detail. Like Walking on Air had the race at his mercy when falling in it last year. And if I'm right, when I'm going through the card here for the Great Yorkshire Chase, which has a big history and a lot of interesting runners like Ron Jest is definitely unexposed for Joel Parkinson and Sue Smith. But Walking on Air, trained by Fabe Bramley and ridden by Brian Hughes, that's an interesting jockey booking. Definitely interested in this Fabe Bramley yard because obviously, as you say, A.B. McCoy's got an association there. Glenn Gooley won, I think, in the same colours, the race at Cheltenham. And Doc Pick Me is another one that will have a supporters. I remember tipping it last year and he won. Capitalising on the Walking on Air mishap, and then he won again last time out over course and distance. A deep cave for me might be too much weight with his recent wins, but he's a very decent animal with a good attitude. But don't know if you got an opinion on this race.
Yeah, Walking on Air, it's one of the lyrics in Atmosphere, one of Joy Division's most iconic tunes, and sure enough, New Order is running in the race as well.
Yes,
Joy Division fan, there's your forecast. I tipped Walking on Air at Cheltenham. I'd actually forgotten this.
But Kim Muir, was it?
The Kim Muir. Alan O'Sullivan rode that day entirely on the basis of his effort in this race, as you say, last year when he was running off 125 and for me was going to win the race under Richie McKernan. Unfortunate incident. Not sure what's happened with him since. Like, he was beaten 77 lengths at Newbury, never went a yard, so they put cheek pieces on him. And Fabe Bramley, it'll be interesting now if there is any money for the horse, because if he runs that race last year, he'd have a big, big chance. Deep Cave is really thriving this year for Christian Williams, has a good attitude as well. I might take a chance in Walking on Air that he comes back to that form of last year, because it's kind of a horse for course thing, but he was in great nick. He was slightly disappointed at Cheltenham but didn't disgrace himself, but it's just his two runs since, I'd be more of a worry.
We have Irish horses going over for this Yorkshire Rose Mares Hurdle Grade 2 at 1:30 at Doncaster. What a soft ground, good to soften places. But Jatara, who's won the race last year, and then Feet of a Dancer for Paul Nolan is in there as well. And Mousy Brown for Dermot McLaughlin. So an interesting Irish angle for this one.
This is a cracking race. And again, eight runners,
yeah.
Eight runners. And when you've an eight-runner race with two or three kind of horses at big, big prices, you can definitely consider an each-way bet. I found this hard. Like, you've two walk in the parks there, Jatara and Dream On Baby. I could be actually wrong, but I think they're the only two walk in the park horses who won a flat race in Ireland. I might actually just get that up here while I'm here, because Walk in the Park has become obviously such a, I guess, the top national hunt. Maybe I'm wrong on that. There might have been two more, but maybe the only two in Ireland. But Walk in the Park has become such a good sire. If he gets horses who stay, they've lots of class. And it's a question mark for Dream On Baby. I do feel if she stays at 6-2, what is she with William Hill?
11-2.
11-2. I feel if she stays, she's definitely in with a shout. Like, she finished third to Wadeau on Feet of a Dancer the last day. But there wasn't an awful lot in it. And Feet of a Dancer, I mean, Wadeau is just such a likeable mare. She kind of pulled it out of the fire that day. Feet of a Dancer does stay. You could see that when fourth to Doddy the Great at Cheltenham. Jatara, as you mentioned, does stay because she won the race last year.
I can't have Jatara. I don't think she's in great form.
Yeah, that run the last day, like, the Colonel Mustard run for me wasn't too bad. Hung according to the jockey, the last day should be running better than that, to be fair.
Sometimes mares can be a bit in and out.
Yeah,
for me.
Absolutely.
And I actually think the Dermot McLaughlin horse is 28-1. a dual-purpose mayor who will stay. The conditions are not an issue. And she's definitely been in and out of her career. She's been running over fences and hurdles. But at 28-1, he's not going over for nothing.
It's not the worst shout in the world. Has to reverse form with Feet of a Dancer and Dream On Baby. But that was 2.5 miles.
To get into the first three at 28.
Yeah, that was 2.5 miles in a 5-horse race at Leopardstown. This is different. And all she does is stay, really. As you say, she's a dual-purpose horse, probably more known as a chaser. But he would likely be going over there with a view to picking up some black type in a grade two. And with that in mind, actually, that sometimes helps a bet like this, because you're ridden to finish third, basically, like realistically. You're ridden to or pick up the pieces.
And if you win, you win.
But that's fine. Like Paddy O'Brien has had a brilliant season himself as well. Interesting runner.
Yeah, keep an eye on that one, folks. Mousie Brown, 28-1. The horse does not know what the odds are. That's what I always say to myself.
Exactly.
That'll Do Moss was second in a grade one at Ferry House last season at 50-1 and then has never raced over this distance under rules for Virgil O'Brien, but she did win her point, so she definitely has her chance, but that's reflected in the betting that it's about 9-2 shot. That's an interesting race, that race. Let's bring in Alex Dunn from William Hill to look ahead to the weekend's race. And how are you, Alex?
Yeah, very well, thanks, guys. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So what is the race that attracting the most interest from a betting perspective? Presumably at Cheltenham somewhere tomorrow, is it, Alex?
Yeah, I think from a betting point of view, it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, there's the top quality races, but we are lacking in field size a little bit. I wonder if that's anything to do with the fact that we had the Berkshire Millions last weekend, and maybe while that was fantastic, it has sort of diluted this a little bit. We've still got top quality performers, but I'd be shocked if the handicaps weren't great finishes tomorrow, particularly it's the 1:15 Jaguars race. I think we'll see a really smart performance there, quite possibly from Jaguar, who I think he's entered in the Ryanair, so this might be the last chance you get to back him in a handicap. But
7-4
in that kind of race won't be. Yeah, it won't be for everyone at that sort of price. But it'll be interesting to see. I will just let you know one race that we're not going to discuss, but one horse who's attracted a lot of cash is in the 4:10 last race at Cheltenham tomorrow. That's the Blue Room for Ollie Murphy and Sean Bowen, 11-7 as we speak. So already really, really well backed. And yeah, just wanted to get that in because I don't think we'll be talking about that race anymore.
Well, we can talk about anything. It's okay. we're not set in stone. So this is the last race at Cheltenham. Is this in the Nolmoran colours? Looks like it on the outside. Sean Bowen.
It is, yeah. Noel, one of his...
Ollie Murphy.
Yeah, he does have some horse with Ollie Murphy.
Active stud.
Which is a look of circumstance for Ollie Murphy because of the Noel Mead connection, or for the Gornelli connection, but...
This is Active Innocence's race, the horse you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was 7-4.
So Active Innocence may or may not get a form boost from Nelly Yoga at this stage. I thought he was short enough now, Active Innocence, because they're like heads up, for example, going over for John McConnell. Like, this horse has run into Culcannon, Calypso's Chance, beat Calypso's Chance, ran into Bambino Fever and No Drama This End when he was a short price favourite at Cheltenham and basically was clinging on for third in the end. But No Drama This End could prove to be very, very good. So I just thought he was short. It was more on hype than Antonella's Active Innocence.
Yeah, heads up is what, 7-2 now with William Hill for this 4:10. How do you then assess the Cotswold Chase? First of all, Alex, that's about really the Grey Dawning. I mean, like, he's not really a betting proposition. Will he drift? Could he drift towards even money by the time the off comes tomorrow?
Yeah, well, this time yesterday he was 2s on. So he's 4-6 already. That's a fair drift in a 4-runner race. I'd like to see him go and win, but at the same time, last season, the Betfair Chase absolutely bottomed the horse and he wasn't really the same after it. It took a long time to recover from that. Thing is, this time around in the Betfair Chase, he didn't have nearly as hard a race. I'd expect him to win, but we've seen quite a bit of cash around already for Spillane's Tower. So hard to know really what to make of this horse. We know there's loads of ability there. He just hasn't really been firing for the last while and he's been mixing up trips and whether he's been running over fences or chases. I don't know what to make of him, but he has been backed. He's into 7-2 now. We've also got Long Press and Flooring Porter in there, who are certainly no back numbers. It's a really, really intriguing contest. Truth be told, I would expect the favourite to go and win fairly comfortably. But the view from the trading room is that we're fairly happy to take him on at a short price. And yeah, already 2s on out of 4-6. So it'd be intriguing to see what kind of price he does go off. But Spillane's Tower, the mover.
What about this international hurdle? There's actually money for Sergino into 9-4 on now for the, obviously big players, Alex, for this 2-mile hurdle with the new lion in opposition.
Yeah, 4-9 now, 15-8 for the new lion. I think Serginho is just proving very, very popular in multis. For singles, right. Maybe not so much, but people who are just piecing a few of them together, whether that's all on the action on Saturday or whether they're looking slightly further afield, maybe with an anti-post view alongside that. But yeah, Serginho is proving pretty popular. Not much movement in the market so far. The new line has actually been trimmed from 9-4 into 15-8. But I don't think they'll change that much, to be honest. I think they're priced up as they should be. It, to all intents and purposes, it is a match. An undermean line was running a decent race when the new line fell up at Newcastle, but I can't see Namin Lyon getting all that close again. I think Serginho will win. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see tomorrow if the new line does attract any more cash, because I personally would have reservations over him over this trip. I think if Serginho just bowls along, he's going to have too much speed.
Totally, totally agree. And sometimes sometimes if it sounds too simple, it actually is that simple. What Alex said there is, then again, he is 4-9. That's the problem.
What about this juvenile race at 12:40 then? Manelli Oga's getting the money, as is One Horse 10. Maestro Conti, though, is a drifter.
Yeah, Maestro Conti is still favourite as we speak at 7-4, but is a drifter. Manelli Oga is the one who's attracting cash, and a fascinating runner for Paul Nicholls, because if you look at his runners over the years, he doesn't really tend to have many triumph types and ones that he'd aim at that race. And Manelli Oga looks like just a bit of an anomaly, or maybe an opportunity that's been presented to him that he's gone, actually, this horse has got plenty of ability, but I'd like to see him win well tomorrow. He's been backed already 11-4 into 2-1. I wouldn't be shocked if he is troubling Maestro Conti for favouritism before too long. It does look a decent renewal, a good little race, but Manelli Oga put in a fair performance last time out, and I'd like to see what he can do tomorrow.
At this stage, the Triumph is one of these, like, the reason that Cheltenham 2026 just looks like one of these Cheltenhams where I just can't wait for it to happen. Like, I mean, even looking forward to the preview nights, is how open the Gold Cup is, how open this race. The Triumph is 4-1. Narciso has is the top price of William Hill at the top of the market. Sevens, Proactive. These are both horses trained by Willie Mullins. And then you have Marge 2, Gordon Elliott rates. But Maestro Conti, Fantasy World, Macho Man, Manila Study, Manelli Oga. There's some good, Precious Man even. Some good horses there that are big. Winston Jr., will he turn up in the race? Barbizon, who was so well touted at Leopardstown. Triumph looks fantastic at this stage.
Before the Fred Winter hurdle came in at Cheltenham, I just always would say to people, put yourself in a darkened room and the Triumph is on.
I loved it.
I used to find it very difficult to get the answer to.
It's funny, Alex, that I think the Fred Winter is one of those races. I was always a fan, getting the trumpet out again, but I backed, was it Ebazine who won it the first year under Nina Carberry? But I like the fact that it took a lot of the horses out of the Triumph.
Dabaroon.
It was Dabaroon. Good show. Ebazine was I think.
Supreme Novices, 40-1.
That's right. And Ebazine was Oliver Brady's horse, who was ex John Ox that went to Cheltenham. But yeah, Alex, I like the Fred Winter, and I think the Triumph is here. Your 4-1 Narciso has a lot of talk about him.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, actually. When I started working for William Hill many, many moons ago, I think it was when I was on work experience, actually, and they said, let's just have a little recap of the Cheltenham Festival. It must have been in March time. And they said, if you had to get rid of one race at Cheltenham, what would it be? And without thinking, I went, Fred Winter. And then they pressed me on why. And I was like, I don't know, really. It's really hard. Like, And they were sort of like, well, it's not about you, though. It's not whether you can find the winner. It's whether it serves a purpose. And it certainly does. But like you said, put yourself in a dark room during the Triumph in the old days. The Fred Winter is sort of like that as well nowadays, because it is just such a quandary. And you mentioned some of the horses there towards the head of the Triumph hurdle betting. They will go to the Fred Winter if connections think that they are well handicapped, and doubtless a lot of them think that they do have a couple of pounds in hand, shall we say. But I think the Triumph picture will shape up a bit more following this and following the Dublin Racing Festival as well. Obviously, we'll get a clearer look on things. But also, the market can react way, way too heavily to one performance. These are runners who may have only had one or two runs over hurdles so far. It may well be that they improved massively from first to second, but it doesn't mean they're going to improve from second to third. And let's not forget, last year's Triumph hurdle winner was 100-1 and hadn't even seen a hurdle until he ran there. So, it's a bit of a lottery, isn't it?
And Gaelic Warrior was beaten in the Fred Winter off 129. And it's just like, that's the beauty of these races.
What about Doncaster? What's catching your eye, Doncaster, Alex?
You've got the Great Yorkshire Chase, where Grand Gest is fairly popular, 11-4 favourite. Joel Parkinson and Sue Smith having such a good season. They've had a slightly quieter month than was the case in November and December, but their runners are still flying, and Grand Gest is a worthy favourite, I'd say, for that race, although the likes of Deep Cave and Doc Pickme are interesting, as is the outside with a whole bunch. Joyeux Machin's attracted a bit of support for Dan Skelton. Is still the outsider at 16-1, but has just been nibbled at. And the race prior to that, the 130, Jatara makes the journey over for Jesse Harrington. In fact, Paul Nolan's got the favourite in that race, Feet of a Dancer, and Jatara second in at 11-4. So the Irish looking to dominate that mare's race, but Jatara has been supported 4-1 into 11-4.
Right, then we got the big one at Ferry House, is the Sol Arena mare's hurdle. Like, Johnny is all over Place de la Nation, and Old School Outlaw 2-1 on with William Hill, Alex.
Yeah, Old School Outlaw has been fairly strong throughout the course of the week. It's right. I joined the call and I heard Johnny talking about Place de la Nation and thought he's just taken everything that I wanted to say about her, because she is that run in the Triumph goes under the radar because of the fact there was a 100-1 winner. So everyone talks about that one, which is fine at the time. But Place de la Nation, I think she's great. I think 5-2 is a good price. And Old School Outlaw is the kind of horse who could go on to bigger and better things, granted. But currently, you're taking a price on what might happen, and given what connections are. JP obviously likes the look of Old School Outlaw. But yeah, 5-2, Place de la Nation. Punter's already latching onto that. Actually, was as big as threes earlier.
I'm
so
actually gutted, Alex. And I had four strong fancies tomorrow. My understanding is Ferry House is called off. So there we go
on Saturday.
Yeah, so that's and Nace was in doubt Sunday, but my understanding now, and yeah, it's from good authority, so Ferry House looks
okay,
like
okay, not confirmed but likely. Okay, well that's so Johnny, you have to scramble a bit, maybe look at Cheltenham here or Doncaster for your charity bet. Have you got one that you can?
Yeah, I'll go with Spillane's Tower then.
Let me introduce to Johnny
for the value.
So €50 on the nose or 25 each way. Johnny Ward's charity bet this week on the Racing Pod. You're going to look at Cheltenham, Johnny. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go with Spillane's Tower if you have the time there, JD, in the in
the 225
in a really really intriguing renewal of the Cotswold Chase. 7-2, it was better than that, but sure. I'm gutted now. I was really looking forward to this tomorrow.
Okay, €50 on the nose, 7-2 for Spillane's Tower in the Cotswold Chase, 225 at Cheltenham on Saturday. Is Johnny Ward's charity bet this week on the Racing Pod? Alex, thanks so much. Speak soon.
Thank you.
And that was Alex Dunn there. That was episode 115 of the Racing Pod. Johnny, thank you so much. A reminder, folks, as well, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcast. We're going to be back next week. Johnny, we'll chat to you then.
Cheers, Judy.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.